few minutes past 3 p.m. Every Wednesday, which I know is confusing because today's Thursday, but Ryan Wiggins comes down from 97.1, spends about an hour with us. So you're in the big chair today.
Yeah, I was hosting. Annie just went on vacation, so I stepped in and pinch hit.
How you like it?
I love it for about an hour. And then you're like, oh, I'm still going. You're like, I have to fill this time. It is one of the most intimidating things in the world before you ever enter into talk. I've said before, I came from music radio. So coming into talk, I had a lot of experience in radio. And I came in and was just like, you have to do what?
Yeah.
You're the content?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
It's intimidating. But then you figure it out.
I Trish and I are like besties, and I tell her all the time, like, what you guys do on the music side is it's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
That I could not do. And you know me well enough, I'm always fascinated by people who can do things I can't do. But it's just like sheep and cattle. Like, mm-hmm. They're two different things.
When once you get trained in one, it's really hard to change your mindset, too. Because if you go from talk to music, unless you're doing a morning show that really allows you to breathe and do a lot, you're playing a song once per half hour, then it's almost like a talk show anyway. But aside from that, you get in there and you go, oh, I'm not supposed to talk for very long. Like, mm-hmm. shut up and move on.
Mm-hmm.
But the opposite is true when you go from music to talk.
Yeah.
Because I remember stepping in the studio for the first time, and I think it actually was with Annie. I don't think the first time was with you guys. And she asked me some question about J.B. Pritzker. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know the answer. Let me explain this.
Yeah.
But I also felt like, but I shouldn't take very long because I'm coming for music. I need to keep this to 30 seconds.
Right.
So I was like, pop, pop, pop. And she just looked at me like, that was too fast.
Yeah.
And I felt uncomfortable. I was like, oh, this is a different way of going about communications.
The very first time I ever cracked a mic on radio was as a guest on Stephen DC, because I was advertising my divorce mediation company. And no, like, I had people in, they had me in, and Courtney Landrum from The Courtney Show, dear, dear friend, awesome person, was the producer. And she was in studio, and the boys were taking calls that I would then respond to. And so, like, for real, I'm not exaggerating, maybe four times in a row, a caller would call and give like this really detailed, like, so I'm going through a divorce and my wife wants to have my 401k and blah, 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 blah. And I would just do this. I could mediate that. And that's all I would say. And so I did that like four times for real. And Courtney, I just hear, and she slides me a note that says, answer the GD effing question.
Oh.
Swear to God.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then right after that's when I started making a play for, you know, I think I could do this professionally. Like, oh, yeah, because you killed it on that interview. Right. So.
Well, it's funny because in that circumstance, you come into somebody else's territory and you feel like I can't take this. This is what you do.
Yeah.
If I say too much, I'm stepping on you.
Yeah.
And especially in talk radio, the opposite is true. Mm-hmm. If you're there, it's because you're there to talk.
Right.
Not the opposite. Like, yes, say whatever you want.
Yeah, this talk radio, especially the way that we do it, because we do it similarly, is the closest thing I ever want to do to improv.
Okay.
I don't want to do improv. That makes me nervous and sweaty. But this is pretty close, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, anytime I ever have an issue with any of the guys, it's like, don't leave me hanging. If I say something really stupid, just tell me that was really stupid. Don't be silent, because that's the killer in a talk show.
Have you ever tried improv? Like, on a stage or anything?
No.
You would never do it? No, I'm asking. Would you ever do it?
Like, I don't think so.
I've never really done stage improv in that way. I was part of a comedy group that did some stuff, but not like that, right out of college. And the one thing I hated, and everybody, like, it's a cliche that they give you this advice in improv, that they say, oh, it's always yes and. Mm-hmm. You've heard that. Everybody's heard that.
Yep.
You're supposed to take whatever was happening and say, yeah, and just add to it and you keep it going.
Yeah.
I think that advice is so bad for comedy because the friction is what makes it funny. Mm. And sometimes allowing somebody to hang out to dry is the funniest thing you can do. Mm-hmm. And so when they would give that advice, I always hated it. And I wasn't really involved like in a Second City type environment or anything. So it wasn't like, oh man, he's really breaking the rules. But I always thought that the really good ones, they probably heard that and went out the other and did whatever they wanted.
Okay, with improv too, don't you guys think it's really, really fun for the people doing it? And then the people who go to see it are generally of that world too, and they're enjoying it too. But like, I always felt like if I were to go being completely outside of that environment, I don't know how much I would be like loving and enjoying the sketches, because it's like, it's almost like a language you don't get. If you're not like in, is it that entertaining and funny, or is it more entertaining and funny because you like, oh, I would have done it that way, or yada, yada, yada.
I have gone to see improv before, like at Second City up in Chicago.
Oh, really?
I'm doing it again when I go back up there in a month or so. And I thought it was great.
Okay.
Like, it's an interesting kind of comedy because I don't recall a single thing that happened. I remember laughing very hard and having a good time. But I think one of the keys to good improv is kind of bringing the audience in on it, right? Like, not so much, not necessarily audience participation, but more just like, hey, we're all in this room laughing, making these jokes like together. Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You kind of, and you kind of have to go in with that open mindset. You have to kind of go in with the mindset that's like, these people are just making it up on the spot versus like a practiced routine.
I still have an unanswered question, which will probably remain unanswered. Whether I could do stand up well in front of strangers, because I've done 7-8 shows now, and they've all gone really well, but it's people who knew me, bought tickets, know my sense of humor, know my backstory, as opposed to if I drove to Kansas City and did an open mic night. Mm-hmm. Would anyone be like, did he say monkey mask? Like, what the hell is he, you know?
Yeah, they already know you.
Have you done that?
I used to write stand-up for a guy. I never really did stand-up, and I was really young. And I really enjoyed writing it. So one of the weirdest things I ever did, after I was off of your show... No, this was before that. I don't know if this ever came up, though. I wrote stand-up for a very short time for Victoria Jackson from Saturday Night Live.
Did I
mention this?
Okay. Yes.
And I thought it was some of the best stuff I'd ever written, but she didn't really love it. Like, she gave me a shot, and I'm like, hey, great. That's great. Like, thank you very much. But she didn't get what I was doing, which was writing in her voice, because I don't know that she had fully embraced her voice, because that's who she is. It wasn't a character. So I didn't quite catch that, oh, you're not doing a character, like, because I was making her character bigger than life. And she was like, no, that's not me. I'm like, oh, I'm actually supposed to write just for you as a person, and that's who you are. And so it never quite connected, but I still have all that material, and I've adapted it to where I just would love to try to do that material sometime. I don't know when I ever would or where, but it would probably be...
opening for Dave at the next DGS Live.
There you go.
Open invitation.
You know what? If that ever happens, I would consider that, because it's... And it could flop. But I mean, I'd rather flop with you guys than in front of people I don't know, I guess. Yeah. So it's intimidating, though.
Yeah, you can only flop so bad in front of friendly people.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, they're rooting for you.
Plus, here's the other thing. You guys know this, and you'll get this. In the 26-year history of the DGS, if we listed the top 100 moments, 98 of them would be mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the show is great, is when, like, didn't see that coming, and then we just riff on it for the next hour.
Yeah.
I wish I could say it's because of my brilliant preparation and writing, but I don't remember any of those.
Right.
It's always the ones where something goes off the rail.
Yeah. And people assume, too, that because you're a public speaker, because you're on the radio, that going and doing public speaking in person is pretty much an easy transition. It's not.
No.
It's completely different, because we're in a room by ourselves right now.
Yeah.
And when you can see people and you're in front of an audience, I'm getting ready to do my brother's wedding this weekend.
Mm.
And he's like, oh, this will be easy for you. And I'm like, man, I've been thinking about that more than anything.
Yeah.
And I'm only on with you for 5 minutes.
There's an inverse relationship for me. Whether I'm on stage playing music or I'm on stage doing comedy, the more people out there, the more comfortable I am. You put me in front of 50 people, I'll find a way to screw that up.
You want to know what's funny? You know who else I've heard say almost the exact same thing? You're not going to believe it. Stephen Curtis Chapman. of all the
he's
a big Christian. Yeah. Like, if you don't even listen to Christian music, you probably heard that name. And he said the same thing. We did little events in, you know, Christian radio where he was in arenas and he'd be like, oh, this is fine. But playing in front of 10 people, he's like, this is awkward.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. One of the very first times, because I used to do, I made quite a bit of money just doing speeches. I just one day said, hey, you can hire me. And people did. And I did it. And the very first one I did was about 100 people. And there was a guy in the front row who was just stone-faced. And everyone else was loving it. And they're laughing. I had him in the palm of my hand. This guy, he just, you couldn't move him. You couldn't get any emotion out of him. And he's all I thought about. And so when I finished the speech, I was just like so despondent. And he came walking up and I'm like, this is going to suck. And he was like, that was just about the best speech I've ever heard. And yeah, he loved it. He just had that. He just had a resting bitch face or something. So,
dude,
you never know.
That is tough. That is really tough. I had a pastor once tell me that about me, but I was in the audience. When I first started going to church, I guess I was there to like study because I would sit there stone faced and listen to the pastor. And just, I guess from his perspective, I looked like I was hating him, but I wasn't. I was just listening. And I later, once I got to know that pastor, I was actually going to the church. He's like, hey, I want to let you know, for a long time, I thought you hated my guts and I thought you were there to kill me or something. I'm like, really? Oh, man, that's weird.
Weird.
Yeah.
We're talking to Wiggins. Dave Murray's going to join us at 3:35. DGS, happy Thursday. Shame that people on the stream can't hear our bumper music, because this may not be the best talk show ever. I may not be the best host ever, but this is the best music ever. Very eclectic.
What was that?
That was Enough is Enough.
Bye.
Enough is Enough.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was the song about themselves?
New Thing.
New Thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The guy's last name is actually Z-N-U-F-F.
Znuff.
Znuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Is that true?
It's fun when you can turn your name into a fun title.
That makes me mad. I don't know why it makes me mad. That makes me mad. I don't like that.
You're angry at Enough's Enough.
I don't like Znuff one bit.
That's funny.
No, thank you.
That's funny.
What kind of name is Znuff?
What if you were given 6 months paid leave, but you had to pursue something? Could be anything you want. Could be a new skill. Could be honing a skill you have. But that's your full-time job. What do you guys think you'd do?
I would write. I would write books and also realize that at the end of that 6 months, I would be broke.
Because no, you're paid.
But at the end of the 6 months, then you have to start making money again.
Well, no. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't realize you'd get this deep.
Okay.
No, like, you have your job now.
Okay.
And they want you to take 6 months.
Oh, it's
a
sabbatical.
You're welcome back with open arms.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So it's not like you're fired.
Free
and
time.
You got a severance.
No, free time.
You just get 6 months.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely write novels. I love it. But it's such intense work. And it's such little payout. And like, so few people end up actually reading your work that you poured over.
How did you do with your books?
Fine. You know, my first book, Life of Human, I think was still, no, that was 2021. That book did pretty well. And I think after that, I released The Grocery List, which is purely comedy.
I loved it.
Okay, good.
I did. I loved it.
Good. You can read that in like 10 minutes.
Because I know you.
Yeah.
And your voice was in my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But that was cool. And now I'm writing another novel. Actually, it's a trilogy that's, I tend to write comedy. And I am trying, based on your prompt here, I am actually doing this, trying to push myself to write non-comedy and write an actual, like, scary book where you feel really uncomfortable the whole time you're reading it. And I'm done with the first one, halfway done with the second one, and halfway done with the third one already.
Wow.
So that's what I would do, because I actually like doing that. It just takes me so long to do it. If I had 6 months, I'd knock them out.
I have a question about your writing process.
Yes.
Can I be in it?
Can you be in the process?
Can I be in the book?
Like, just name a character.
That wasn't a question about process at all.
Can I be one of the guys in the book?
I guess I'm going to have to go back to my process and see if there's a reason to name a character Andrew who is you.
So there's like a find and replace that you can do on like a word
I know
processor.
I can just change a name, but don't you want to be you? Or do you want to be just a name?
I'll know.
What?
You can actually name it whatever. I'll know.
Andrew's like, it's okay. Just thank me first.
Yes, if I could. Yes, if I could be thanked in the acknowledgement instead of your wife and children, dude, I would really.
That's an interesting question, though. Is there anyone in your life, professionally or personally, who would belong in a horror book? Doesn't mean they have to be the monster.
Ooh, you better say it. The three of us.
The Dave Glover character would be. A good guy, though.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 334. Ryan Wiggins hanging out with us for the hour. Dave Murray joins us courtesy of the Saliga Heating and Cooling Weather Center. Hello, Dave.
Hello there.
How are
wigging
things?
It. Wigging it today.
Wigging out.
That's like my last name.
Enough's enough.
Yeah, Andrew just broke my heart telling me that Chip's Enough changed his name from Rabowski.
Gregory Rabarski.
Okay.
Is his real name. I can't believe Chip's Enough was a made up name. That's so.
He fooled me for 30 years. Dave, before we get to the weather, where I was just asking the guys if you could get a 6-month sabbatical, which you kind of have, and get full.
It's kind
pay,
of a permanent one.
But you have to. Focus on something okay. that you already do or something that you want to do. Would it be steel drum? Would it be golf? Like, what would you spend your 6 months?
I would want to work at a golf architectural firm.
Interesting. Like planning out the courses?
And help design golf courses, yeah.
Very interesting. I didn't know you're that into golf.
I used to be. Not so much anymore, just because I'm an old, you know what. It's not as enjoyable as it used to be, but
so you're kind of a wheeler. You want to be good at what you do.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not that I get frustrated. It's just like, you know what? At one point, early on, like in high school, I was down to like a 2-3 handicap.
Oh, damn.
I'm not even close. I mean, I'm like a 19 now. Mm. So it's a little frustrating.
My goal is to be a 19.
Yeah, you know, the treetop golf course down by the river.
Yeah.
Merrimack.
Yeah.
I did that one. I designed that one.
I thought you had designed.
Wow.
That's not the only one, though, right?
No, there's another one on the east side.
I played that one.
Okay.
And every time I would play it in high school and beyond, somebody go, you know who designed this course? Dave Murray. And I didn't know if it was true. I thought maybe it was a legend.
Yeah.
It was an urban legend. Yeah. No, I did. It was kind of designed as a 9-hole course and then with two sets of tees so you could play 18.
Yeah.
What is the biggest challenge in designing a course?
Everything. Everything's a challenge. You know, you got to take a look at the land, what the owner wants to do, obviously, how much money they want to spend, and all that kind of stuff. It, down at Treetop, we tried to elevate some of the greens. This was a long time ago. I don't know how elevated they are now, but just account for flooding so that we knew the course was going to flood. It always does down there. And so you try to elevate the greens a little bit.
Very interesting. Do you can you enjoy a poorly designed course?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I can usually pick out who the designer was without knowing. Just by the layout and some of the looks of it. You can kind of pick it up.
What's the your favorite course? Maybe not the most expensive or well known, but the one that like you just love it.
I do like I like the Bay course at Kapalua on Maui, which just happens to be closed right now. It's a very enjoyable course to play. I kind of grew up playing at Rhode Island Country Club in my high school days. Mm-hmm. Love that course. Just love that course. There's a par three on that course. It's number 17. It can range from like a sand wedge to a 4-iron.
Wow.
And it's an elevated tee and an elevated green.
Cool.
Just depending on the winds.
Yeah,
I've got to factor in the winds. I've done some work with Hale Irwin's group with weather information and how to
pull
a course together.
Yeah, I'm back in. I'm back into playing. I didn't play. I would play once a year maybe for like the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And then I met my new best friend, Ed Curtis, who's probably listening now. 84-year-old dude, awesome guy, knows everyone in the world, and is a golf instructor. So we go out, we play 9-18, and he instructs me as we play.
Oh, that's neat. You don't get upset.
No, I don't.
No.
Which is weird because you may remember I was banned from playing games on my own show for a year because I'm such an a-hole loser. But for some reason, playing golf, I guess I don't have that high of expectations for myself.
Yeah. One of my who turned into one of my best friends. We were we had met on Maui. He's from Chicago, and really good golfer, way better than me. And we were on I think it was the ninth hole, and he was getting really PO'd with his game. He was getting really really upset, and he also has a cell phone on all the time. So going down the ninth fairway, I grabbed his phone. I said, this is going away for the rest of this round. You're not going to look at it. But better yet, you're so upset. And I said, look up. Just look up. Look where you are. You're in the middle of the ninth fairway. And it's all Pacific Ocean. Deep blue. Beautiful. And I said, what's the point of being upset?
Yeah.
And he mellowed out, played a great round of golf. And I was like his therapist for nine holes.
Nice. I did that with a guy one time, but it was his pants.
I think about your pants.
These are going away.
Okay. It's either that or they're going back on.
I'm not trying to transition to weather here, but you could do that today in St. Louis. Look around.
Yes.
Look at where you are.
Look how gorgeous. You are on Tucker Boulevard, my friend.
Well, that's something special. That's something just special.
Yeah, Dave, speaking of the weather, it sounds a little bit dicey, you know?
Yeah, a little bit, but I'm not overly excited about it. Like there are, so as Roger mentioned, there are a couple of showers around, little rumbles of thunder here and there. That will take us into the evening, and then it just kind of breaks down. Comes back late tonight, but very, very limited. Couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms around tomorrow, but also limited, a lot of dry time. I think tomorrow evening is fine. It's cloudy, but fine. Then more showers and thunderstorms late night. Saturday, partly sunny skies. I've got to keep some showers and thunderstorms out there, but they'll be fading as we go through the day, 87, and Sunday, partly sunny and 87 degrees. This is not a severe, widespread severe weather outbreak.
Yeah.
Main feature, if you get under a strong storm, heavy downpours of rain, some thunder and lightning.
Dave, I love bringing up these stories to you, but I also hesitate because it makes you so mad. But... there are a bunch of stories today out. One I saw was on Drudge that discussing the relative benefits / risks of sending reflective particles into the sky to dim the sun, to affect the weather, and to bring down climate change. And some of the forces are really into this and ready to go. And what do you? Science fiction?
My feeling, when you start, no, I don't think it's necessarily science fiction. I think stuff like that could be done, but it's, why are you going to mess with this stuff? Why do you have to screw around with what Mother Nature is doing? Because most likely, yeah, you might solve one problem, but you're probably going to create a much bigger problem in the long run.
Yeah.
It's a big world out
there. Launching trillions of mirrors into the atmosphere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
I think we should try it.
Yeah, I mean,
what do we have to lose?
Remember in like 2009 when that huge oil spill happened in the Gulf and everybody was like, oh, Obama, you really messed up. And it was going to be this tragedy for decades. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It became nothing.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, unless I'm missing something.
Exxon Valdez was kind of like that, too. That this was going to, you know, end life as we knew it.
Yeah.
But, you know. Nature has a way of really trying to take care of things.
Yeah.
Doesn't work all the time, but has a way.
Yeah, I mean, if
that's the line from Jurassic Park, I think nature has a way of really trying to take care of things. Jeff Goldblum says it.
I'm sort of a fan of those dork shows, like if humans were gone, you know, and then they're like 100 years, the vines grow, and 1,000, you know, it's like
I love those.
Yeah,
yeah, they're fun, and they're always they always end on, but Mount Rushmore.
Right.
Would still be here.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, yeah, Mount Rushmore's still there.
The only thing left.
Take that, aliens.
Rach, weren't you underwhelmed by Mount Rushmore?
No, it's just, I saw it as a child, and you get there, and it's really far away.
Mm.
You know? It's not like you're seeing how huge it is. You are, but it's also like, it's way over there.
Yeah.
You gotta
so
stand.
You can't get like close to it?
No.
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 No. National Park is a viewing area.
You can see it fine.
Yeah, you can see it fine. Yeah. It's just, it's not like, wow. I don't know how to put
no,
this.
No, I agree. I'm with you.
I haven't seen Andrew that crestfallen in quite a while.
Yeah, were you planning a trip?
No.
Andrew saw Richie Rich whenever they have their own family Mount Rushmore, and they're like going inside of the head.
Yeah,
and he thought that's what the real Mount Rushmore was like.
I thought you'd really...
Can I camp on Lincoln?
I thought you were like feet away from it.
No.
There's like a valley or something.
How'd you be
it's
feet away
to
from
see.
It?
Like,
it's
you
neat
stand,
to see.
You could stand at the foot of it and behold.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, I just went a couple years ago. And it is a little smaller than you'd expect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is still, like, what is the other one there that's Crazy Horse?
Yeah.
That they're building?
That one is
huge. And it's actually really impressive, but they're not done with it.
Yeah. I've never been, but I watched a special on how they carved it. And that's crazy.
It's cool.
That's really something.
Yeah. Using old tech.
Yeah. Step one, get really far away from everybody.
Build it in a place that people can't touch it.
That's probably a good idea.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All righty.
We're going to end it right there awkwardly. Never meant to call
you. Ryan, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but Dave said we had to play this song for you.
Oh, I'm not uncomfortable.
You cannot trust Rachel with anything.
You told her that, but she wasn't supposed to tell me?
That's right. Or anyone else, for that matter.
I'm okay with it. I mean, when I came in, you put your hand immediately on my thigh, so I knew.
Oh, that was your thigh?
It's probably heading in that direction. So you make it to four.
Can I talk about something kind of political?
Sure.
I hate politics.
I kind of low-key hate the new bike lanes downtown.
Okay, let's go there.
And to me, it's not just, it's practical. If you're not from here, the way that the do not enter signs are positioned, it looks like you can't go down Tucker. I've been down here since 1990. And other than police officers, I've never seen anyone on a bike. And it's also existential to me, because to me, this is like, really? This is the most important thing to do to downtown St. Louis?
Yeah.
Like, to provide for the non-existent bike riders and take away a lane of traffic and make it weird?
Now, if I could devil's advocate for a second, because I agree, there's not many people riding bikes downtown, at least not while we're downtown and outside. But it is a lot easier to cross Tucker now as a pedestrian.
That's true.
And I think it was mostly a traffic calming measure rather than like, we have so much bike traffic. I think it very intentionally was to make Tucker more narrow so that people are speeding less on Tucker. They feel less, you know, empowered to just go 60 miles an hour. So I think it has accomplished that. I also really like the stripes they've painted for the pedestrian walkways. It just makes it easier to tell what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I appreciate that part. It also has gotten better since they painted the actual bike symbols and like put that green part on the bike lane. Cause for a while they hadn't painted and you would see people driving down that bike lane and like,
oh yeah,
having nowhere to go all of the time.
Yeah.
So it
what
was
do you
confusing
think
for a
about
there.
The ancient 1989 Field of Dreams philosophy? If you build it, they will come.
Not downtown.
No.
No.
Don't you think that's the goal, though? Is that they're trying to make it more friendly for people to just enjoy the city in ways that they can't now?
See, to me, that's sort of like if I were going to try to make myself more attractive. And so I got bee sting lips. That's not the first place to start.
You don't think?
No.
Well, don't you like that there are newer roads, though?
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Like that is
the,
nice.
The roads, it feels like progress for once. And it feels like, oh, something's new. This
something
is encouraging.
Got, something got done.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I should just be thankful that something happened.
I don't know. Maybe not. I changed my mind immediately.
Ryan's been all over the place this segment.
I love the idea of going on a scooter around the city, though. I've never done it, but when I see it, I go, someday.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that. It looks fun.
As soon as I figure out which app to download.
Exactly.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah.